offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, our weekly series where we take up a discourse of Swami, play it in small parts, and undertake a small discussion following it. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai, being joined by Sai Prakash to co-host this show. But as Bishu revealed to you, we also have a very special guest, and we're very glad to have him on our show. We have the pleasure of having the company of Srinivas Sri Rangarajan sir. Rangarajan sir is no stranger to listeners of Radio Sai. Those of you who have heard the Radio Sai Study Circle will know that he is the moderator of our Radio Sai Study Circle. But apart from that, an alumnus of our university and currently serving Bhagwan as the controller of examinations of the Sri Satyasai University. But more than that, I should tell you that sir offers a very, very informative blog which is called His Message, His Voices. And I should also reveal a secret that many times for this program I've referred to his blog, so we are sure that he is going to add a lot of value to this program. It is with great joy and happiness I invite Rangarajan sir to this program. Sai Ram sir.
Thank you, Priyan.
And Sai Ram Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram Priyan. Sai Ram sir. You know, whenever Bishu says it's time to go to Shravanam Mananam, I always wonder what's going to happen in this session. And the topic this time, the discourse itself is named Know Thyself. And
I think nothing more needs to be said of how baffled we are about what the discourse is.
We can be silent for the rest of the time.
Exactly. I think that's the
silence
best.
Reveals the best.
Because here is Swami saying, know thyself before you say anything. Mm-hmm. And that really shows how far we are from knowing ourselves. But nevertheless, this is one day I was talking to Arvind Sai, who works with Swami's discourses, and he's in that process of categorizing these discourses. Mm-hmm. And I casually asked him, if you could say what is that one or two themes which recur in Swami's discourses. You can say that every discourse Swami speaks about. Mm-hmm. The only thing he said was about self-knowledge and mm-hmm. about love.
Correct.
Wherever he speaks, to whoever the audience is, mm-hmm. these two themes will always be there. Mm-hmm. It might have a bit of discipline, a bit of learning and whatever is associated with the audience, but mm-hmm. always there will be knowing yourself. And about
in fact,
love.
He always equated the two. He said, absolutely. Knowing the self is, in fact, nothing different from love itself.
In fact, that's what Swami says in Jnanavahini towards the end. He says, love is no different from knowledge.
Right.
this whole thing of know yourself, sir is here with us today, but I think, sir, you joined in the year 1990. And what was your feeling when you first heard these discourses from Swami? You hailed from Chennai, am I right?
From Bangalore.
From Bangalore. So what was your feeling? How did you take to this set of discourses when you first came in?
Yeah, truly speaking, it's a very, great experience for me being part of this session mm-hmm. because I joined my MBA program in the year 1990. Mm-hmm. And to put it briefly, at that point of time, I was in a state perhaps which many youth find themselves today, totally lost, mm-hmm. absolutely disillusioned with the world, not knowing what to do. And nobody can guide you, neither your parents nor your friends nor your family members. And that was the time I really came into Bhagwan's Institute. And to tell you the truth, this 15 days turned my life completely. I recall in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, Arjuna once asked Krishna, "The Krishna, I'm following all that you're saying with absolutely no idea what I will gain at the end." Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he says, so finally, if I have to leave this body and I have not achieved the goal, what would happen? I mean, it's all in vain. Neither am I there nor am I here. Success in neither of the worlds.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Then Krishna reveals, I'll just put it in my words, a very great significance of this. He says, see, worldly knowledge is such that at the end when you die mm-hmm. and you're born again, you start from zero.
Correct.
So you again start from A for apple, be it a scientist or a great researcher or a doctor, he starts from A for apple, B for boy. But Krishna says spiritual experiences are not like that. Mm-hmm. When you leave and you come again with another human body, the situation in which you're born, the circumstances, the family are all like a launching pad for you to take over from where you left. This summer course was something like that for me. Because after the 15 days, it was like a jigsaw puzzle all falling in place, and I knew, my God, this is what I was missing out. So it was really a great experience for me.
So from 1990 to 2014, do you think you have had an experience of what Swami is speaking in this set of discourses, maybe in flashes? As Swami himself has said in some places that everybody goes through this kind of experience of unity, you know, to feel oneness in creation, but it happens in flashes.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, it's more intellectual. We know we can talk about it like we're doing today, but to live in it is a totally different experience. And Swami did allow us to live in it.
Right.
In fact, a simple thing, you did Gram Seva. That time we lived in it, possibly, you know, few seconds.
Correct.
But that constant integrated awareness all the time, especially when you are faced with challenges in life, during those times, do we remember this? That's where the catch comes. That needs tremendous.
Fact, so even as you're referring to Gram Seva, I remember speaking to one of my classmates, you know, after he passed out of the university. He went and joined a group which was doing a lot of village service. They would go out and do all kinds of service to those people there. I asked him this, you know, you have done Gram Seva here under Swami, and you have also involved yourself in an activity outside. Did you find any difference? Because activity-wise, yes, that was much more elaborate than what Swami does here. It's after all a packet of food and a pair of clothes for a household. And they were doing a lot of things. They were building toilets and they were repairing roads. So activity-wise, that was much more intensive. So I asked him, what's the difference? And he gave an answer in one sentence which I felt that is the experience which you were talking about. You know, he let us experience it. He said, when I go and do it there, I do it. When I did in Gram Seva, I didn't do it.
Amazing.
Mm. And he said, I can feel it. Mm. I can really feel the difference. Mm. Because when we do it under Swami, we are not the doer at all.
And perhaps the other moments when that happens is when we sat in the interview room listening to Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the time the whole world was an illusion, and you know, God was all that mattered for us. It was so easy during those moments to experience. You know, Swami gave us that. It was so amazing.
In fact, as we are talking about it, the only thing that I have mentioned this before also in this show, but again it comes back so strongly to me that the same Atma or the same Godhead or the same power that is inside us is manifest in this form outside us. And there was absolutely no contradiction. There was absolutely no contradiction. And when we would say Swami Hridayavasi, I mean, a third person would, he's standing outside you, and how can be inside? How can he be inside your heart?
How can you address him like that?
How can you address him like that? But for us,
it was a seamless experience.
It was absolutely seamless. And I think that experience comes because certain times when Swami reveals certain things to you, which are so, you know, so intimate and something which only you know. At that time you start beginning, yes, Swami is in my heart and Swami knows everything.
In fact, that's how the conviction in Bhagwan grew in most of us, you know, when slowly we started realizing, hey, that Swami outside there and what is something talking within me is one and the same.
Correct.
That's how slowly we started believing, oh, Bhagwan is, you know, divine and God.
So that apart, you know, talking about the summer course, you came from outside. I think you had completed your engineering.
Yeah.
And here you're going into a university which is putting you in such crowded rooms, and I'm sure there was a lot of discomfort you could talk about, given the summer course settings. How is it as a physical experience, as an ambience living in?
Oh, let me tell you, it was like sweet medicine. Now, normally medicine is bitter. So if I were to explain how we stayed, 25 to 30 of us in a small room where possibly 12 could stay.
Where usually stay.
You know, we were crammed and we had to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to take your bath.
Mm.
You know, because the number of washrooms were, you know, limited and so many students. But looking back, my God, I enjoyed every bit of it. Because the overpowering presence of Bhagwan and the spiritual message. I mean, today if you were to ask me, am I ready? Oh, any time. 100 times I would be ready to go through a summer course. And I think all that made the difference. The ambience, the circumstances, his presence, the presence of so many elderly people whom he invited to speak. Mm. I think it was a package, you know, very divinely engineered package. To sow the seeds of spirituality in the hearts of young youth.
Mm.
And the way it blossomed, for me it was like a crash course, and you know, I could feel the blossoming immediately. For many it could have taken time. But really it's a very great exercise, and that's why even today at Sri Satya Science of Higher Learning, we have retained this model and we try to sort of present it exactly the way Swami did it, because you cannot exactly duplicate it, because his presence made all the difference.
Right.
But the other components do happen. All the students come together, stay here in Prashanti Nilayam, in those crunch rooms, going through those difficulties, and that makes all the difference.
Right. I think you've made it almost an annual feature now. We have
it is an annual feature. Just when the academic year starts in the month of June.
Right.
When you were mentioning about the experience of Gram Seva, you said it really allowed us to transcend our personal desires and it brought about that sense of unity. So that's exactly what Swami mentioned in the last discourse. You know, towards the end of the three gunas, as Swami was saying that the effects of the three gunas and how they influence your way of thinking and your approach, he said desire is what binds you back to these gunas. And desire is what brings you back into this. And then he in fact says, the only way to go out of that is through selfless service. Through selfless service.
In fact, in an earlier discourse, Swami mentioned that point. You know, if you could be happy with everybody else's happiness, you will never find a moment of grief. Because somebody or the other is always happy, and if you can connect your happiness with theirs.
And today it's just the opposite, no? Because when I see somebody happy, I feel sorry. I mean, that's the state of affairs. Somehow this whole competitive nature of I just cannot tolerate. And we always compare ourselves with somebody better off. I mean, there are millions who are not as fortunate as us, who have less than us.
Right.
But you never compare ourselves with them saying, oh, I'm better off. But always see, hey, that guy has got that car and I don't have it. He has a television, I don't have
There's
it.
There's no end to it.
I think that's the bane of possibly human existence. Right. We need to get over this sort of
I think, thinking. The beauty of at least the previous discourse was that Swami started with something absolutely profound, and I think our listeners are witness to how baffled and breathless we were when we went through that discourse. But towards the end, so beautifully, because Swami was talking about gunas and Swami was explaining how that is the basis for all the separation that you see, how the creation came to be. And then Swami said, if there is one thing you can point out and say, this is what is actually causing you separation from everything else, in the ground level, it is desire. Because the moment desire comes, you're trying to possess something, which means you're telling yourself, this is not me, I want it. And Swami is saying, the only way to counter it is, go and do seva.
You know what, Dave, I've always found Bhagwan's discourses so scientific. I mean, so logical, so structured. So he would start with a very macro level theory, but the way he brought it down to grassroots level practices. So we always left with the feeling, wow, I can do it. I mean, you would have heard Vedantic talks elsewhere, but it's always like, when you go back, you do not know which world you are in. But here always Swami drove us to action, passion, and we always went back saying that, yes, from tomorrow now I'm going to be a changed person. Though of course, it wouldn't happen every time, and we came back to our old ways, but that inspiring it was.
In fact, that's what Swami had told one of the students, moksha, you want liberation? I can give it to you in one instant. It's very easy. Swami, what should I do? Take any one of my teachings and follow it. Any one teaching of mine you take and follow it sincerely, I will give it to you.
That is as a hint and a clue as much as it is a challenge.
Yeah. I'm also reminded in many of our interviews with students, whenever we would complain, Swami, this is really difficult, Swami, and always you'd give this example of a rose petal. He would say, even crushing that petal is difficult. And but spirituality is more easier. And knowing the truth, still we would fall for it, oh my God, Swami says it's so easy. It must be. He says, even crushing a petal is difficult. Even, pressing the butter may be difficult, but mind control, chala easy. This is the way Swami really inspired all of us, and that's how we could, practice whatever little bit we did in our lives.
Beautiful. In fact, coming back to the series of discourses that we have been dealing with, only one thought comes to me. How systematically Swami started with, I am not the body, I am not the senses, I am not the mind, I am not the buddhi, I am not ahankara. And then now he comes to know thyself, so I am the Atman. It's very similar to that Atma Shatakam of Adi Shankara. Mano buddhi ahankara chittani naham. Then he goes, na punyam na papam. Then name dvesha ragav, name lobo moho. Then he goes, finally he comes and says, aham nirvikalpo nirakara rupo viputvam cha sarvatra sarve indriyanam. Sadame samatvam na muktir na bandha chidananda rupa shivoham shivoham. So basically he has brought it through all the levels, and now he's, you are not this, you are not this, you are not this, and who are you? I think that's what we'll learn in this.
Similarly, quite similar to even the Anandavalli, where Yes, Bhrigu goes around and says that I am food. And
yes.
Then he says, no, I am the...
Go back and search.
Go back and search. Because Swami starts with culture. Swami is talking about community living. That was the first discourse. Indian culture.
Truth.
What is samskriti? What is truth? And why that is important. And now we have come to the right, you know, the almost the last few paces of that thing. Swami is talking about know thyself.
And this is still the 11th discourse. I wonder what's going to be in the next 5 discourses. But
it's like a treasure mine, you know. You keep digging and more and more comes out.
That's right.
And you also feel that I know this, but I don't know why I don't know it, you know.
That's right. So I think we should go to the first clip of this discourse.
The first clip of this discourse.
Mrudu hudayanam saumyam daivam. Mrudu hudayanam saumyam daivam. Piyarupanam ramyam daivam. Tatvajnanam visvam daivam. Tatvajnanam visvam daivam. Gunaruchinam sunyam daivam. Mrudu hrudayanam, mrudu hrudayanam saumyam daivam. Priyarupanam ramyam daivam. Tatvajnanam tatvajnanam visvam daivam. Gunaripudinam sunyam daivam.
Prema Swarupulara, embodiments of divine love. Aham atma gudakesha sarva bhutasya sthitaha. Arjuna, నేను ఆత్మను, సర్వభూతములు యందు ఉండునటువంటి వాడు నేనే.
అర్జున, ఐఎమ్ ఆత్మన్, ఐఎమ్ ద రెసిడెంట్ ఆఫ్ ఎవ్రీ హార్ట్.
అహం ఆదిత్య మధ్యంచ భూతానామశ్చ ఏవచ. నేను ఆది మధ్య అంతమును కూడాను నేనే.
ఐ ఆమ్ ది బిగినింగ్, ద మిడిల్ అండ్ ది ఎండ్.
ఈ చరాచర ప్రపంచమునందు గోచరించినదంతయు కూడాను ఆత్మతత్వమే.
ఆల్ దట్ యు సీ ఇన్ దిస్ వరల్డ్ మూవింగ్ అండ్ అన్మూవింగ్ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ ఓన్లీ.
ఆధ్యాత్మిక క్షేత్రమునందు అడుగడుగున వినిపించినది ఆత్మని.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఆత్మ విచ్ ఈస్ హర్డ్ ఇన్ ద ఫీల్డ్ ఆఫ్ స్పిరిచువాలిటీ అట్ ఎవ్రీ స్టెప్.
కనిపించినది ఆత్మని.
వాట్ యు సీ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ.
అనిపించినది ఆత్మని.
వాట్ యు హియర్ ఇస్ ఆత్మ.
మై మరపించినది ఆత్మని.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఆత్మ which makes you forget yourself.
Kanukane ahamatma gudakesha sarvabhutasya sthitaha. Lokamulandu atma kanidi marokati ledu.
That is why he has said that there is nothing in this world which is not atma.
ఈనాడు మానవుడు సాధించవలసినటువంటిది ఆత్మనిష్టనే.
వాట్ మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ టు అచీవ్ టుడే ఈజ్ దాట్ రెజల్యూషన్ టు సీ ఆత్మ.
స్వస్వరూపానుసంధానమే ఆత్మనిష్ట.
రియలైజింగ్ హూ యు రియలీ ఆర్, స్వస్వరూప సందర్శన ఈజ్ దట్ వౌ విచ్ యు హావ్ టు టేక్ టు హావ్ దర్శన ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ.
తనను తాను గుర్తించుకోవటమే ఆత్మ జ్ఞానం.
రియలైజింగ్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్ ఈజ్ ఆత్మ జ్ఞాన.
మానవత్వమునందు ప్రప్రథమంలో మనము సాధించవలసినటువంటిది ఆత్మానందమే.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది ఆత్మిక్ బ్లిస్ విచ్ మ్యాన్ హ్యాస్ టు అచీవ్ ఇన్ ది వెరీ ఫస్ట్ ప్లేస్ ఇన్ ది హ్యూమన్ క్వాలిటీస్.
మనము నిరంతరము కూడాను జ్ఞప్తియందు ఉంచుకోవలసినటువంటిది ఆత్మతత్వమే.
వాట్ విల్ హావ్ టు రిమెంబర్ కాన్స్టెంట్లీ అండ్ త్రూ అవుట్ ఈజ్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ.
ఈ ఆత్మనే ఎరుక అని పిలువబడుతుంది.
దిస్ ఆత్మ ఈజ్ అవేర్నెస్. ఎరుక.
ఈ ఎరుకనే సర్వభూతములయందు నేను నేను అనే స్మరణను కలిగిస్తుంది.
దిస్ అవేర్నెస్ రిసౌండ్స్ ఇన్ ఎవ్రీ హ్యూమన్ బీయింగ్స్ హార్ట్ యాజ్ ఐ ఐ అండ్ ఐ.
ఈ స్మరణ శక్తియే అహం అహం అహం.
దిస్ పర్టిక్యులర్ మెమరీ ఆఫ్ వన్స్ రియల్ సెల్ఫ్ ఈజ్ అహం ఐ ఐ.
ఈ అహము దేహముతో తాదాత్మ్యం పొందినప్పుడు ఇది అహంకారంగా రూపొందుతుంది.
వెన్ దిస్ అహం ఐడెంటిఫైస్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ విత్ ద బాడీ ఇట్ బికమ్స్ అహంకార.
ఇది మిథ్యా నేను.
దిస్ ఈజ్ మిథ్యా.
ఇది సత్యమైన నేను కాదు.
దిస్ ఈజ్ నాట్ ది ట్రూ నేమ్.
ఇది మిథ్యా నేను.
దిస్ ఈజ్ ది నేమ్ విచ్ ఈజ్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ మిథ్యా.
అయితే ఈ ఆత్మకు అనంతరము అనంతరము కేవలము అనవరతము అడ్డుతగులనిది మనస్సు.
ఇట్ ఈస్ ది మైండ్ విచ్ కమ్స్ బిట్వీన్ ఆత్మ అండ్ వన్ సెల్ఫ్ కంటిన్యూస్లీ.
సూర్యుడు నుండి తన వేడి వల్ల ఆవిర్భవించినటువంటి యొక్క మేఘములు సూర్యుని ఏ విధంగా మరుగు చేయుచున్నదో అదే విధంగానే ఆత్మ నుండి పుట్టినటువంటి యొక్క మనసు మనోసంఘాతమైనటువంటి మేఘమును అడ్డుతగులుతూ ఉంటున్నాయి.
జస్ట్ యాస్ ద క్లౌడ్స్ విచ్ ఆర్ ఫార్మ్డ్ బై ది సన్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్ ఆర్ కవరింగ్ సన్, మైండ్ విచ్ హెస్ కమ్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆత్మ ఈజ్ కమింగ్ బిట్వీన్ ది బాడీ అండ్ ఆత్మ.
మనసు ఉండినంత వరకు మానవుడు ఆత్మతత్వాన్ని కాని ఆత్మ జ్ఞానమును కాని ఆత్మ విషయాన్ని కాని అర్థం చేసుకోలేడు.
యాజ్ లాంగ్ యాజ్ మ్యాన్ హ్యాజ్ ఎ మైండ్ హీ కెనాట్ అండర్స్టాండ్ ది ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ ఆర్ ఆత్మ ఇన్
సర్వకాల సర్వావస్థల యందును ఆత్మను గుర్తించేటువంటి యొక్క స్థితి కలిగినటువంటి వానికే సాక్షాత్కారమని చెప్పబడుతుంది.
దట్ పర్సన్ who experiences under all circumstances and at all times the real truth alone can be described as to have atma sakshatkara.
So that was the first clip, and Swami is declaring in no unequivocal terms that what he's going to talk about in this discourse.
It's so profound.
And I think Swami starts with that wonderful shloka. I think you said it's from Bhajagovindam.
No, no, right? It's not. The first Telugu poem that Swami mentions is like a translation, Telugu version of Bhajagovindam, that tune.
Okay, okay. The same tune.
In the same tune. Okay. As Swami had sung some of the Bhajagovindam shloka.
In Telugu version.
In Telugu version. But I don't know where that Padyam is from. But the second half is obviously from Bhagavad Gita. And he says, I am Atma, residing in all beings. You know, when you hear that statement from Swami, It is so authentic, it is so true. And here is somebody who is actually teaching us the Gita again. He is not giving a commentary on the Gita. He is not actually explaining to us what the Gita said. He is actually giving the Gita again to us.
Actually, just hearing this particular statement Swami makes, I am the being in all, I'm reminded of a very beautiful experience I had. In one interview in Vrindavan, there was a young American who was there in a group. And in the course of his the conversation, Swami suddenly materialized a fruit. It was a cherry. I'm not very sure what fruit it was. And Swami was very happy with him, apparently, because he had left everything. He had come. He was serving Swami. Swami said, eat this fruit. The gentleman took it, and like we all would do, he kept it in his hand because naturally in front of Swami won't feel like eating. And after a while, Swami looked at him and said, eat it. So he was very, very shyly, he was sort of biting and eating it. And then something very significant and profound happened. The seed he held in his hand, Swami immediately got up. He said, give me the seed. The seed is mine. You know, we all were a little stunned. Swami physically got up, took the seed, threw it in the, went to the washroom, threw it and washed his hands and came back, gave us enough time to digest what he had said. The way I look at it is, he said, the fruit is yours, but sarvam bijam mam sarva bhutanam. I am the seed in everything. No, this was like a, you know, practical illustration of Bhagwan being the inner dweller of each one of our lives. Amazing. I can never forget it.
And I think it also means that when he gives the fruit, you eat it.
you eat it, yes. The karma phala cannot be, you have to eat it, no choice. Bitter or sweet.
And you know, even as Swami was saying this thing that the constant remembrance of who you are and constant remembrance of what your true self is, I'm reminded of another small interaction which happened, you know, when a youth group was with Swami, and they said, Swami, you are saying that we are all God, and we know you are God, but how do we know that we are also God? How do we come to that realization? The Swami asked him, how do you know that I am God? And they couldn't think of any better answer. He said, Swami, because you say so. And kind of, we trust you, you know, you say so, because you keep repeating and you keep reminding us that you are God. Swami said, do the same thing. Keep telling yourself you are God.
Okay.
Just like how I keep telling that I am God, you keep telling that you are God. One day you will understand. That constant reminding and constant remembrance is what Swami was referring to then.
Now remember, Swami always gave us this hierarchy. No, he kept reminding us again and again that it starts with body, as you discussed even earlier, then the senses, and then the mind, and then the intellect, and eventually the Atman. It's more like a rheostat in physics, you know. You can just choose what the resistance should be. So actually we can just decide where the focus of our awareness should be. You know, this is beautifully illustrated in the life of Jesus. He started with, I'm the messenger of God. So clearly his awareness was focused on the body and the senses. And when it went to the mind and the intellect, he said, I'm the son of God. And eventually he sort of, you know, naturally aligned himself with the true self. He declared, I and my father are one. And in our own scriptures, we have heard Swami saying how Hanuman, when he was asked to introduce himself, he said, see, if I look at myself as a body and mind, then I'm the slave of Lord Rama. Like we all are instruments of Bhagwan. But he says, if I really rise to the level of the mind, I'm only his reflection. Actually, he is looking at me through a mirror. So the mind is like a mirror. And if he says, at the highest level, if I were to really associate myself with the higher self, Rama and I are actually one. I mean, this so beautifully Swami used to explain how practically we can do it. It's just we have to decide where should my focus be.
Beautiful.
Like an analogy which we had shared sometime back. In an interview, there's a foreigner who was asking Swami, that Swami, how do you see that everything is one? Right. Like, you know, he was in that frustrated quest. He said, how do you say, Swami, that everything is one? And when you can see so much diversity around, when you can see that forms are many and are varied, how do you see that oneness? And it looked like Swami also was desperate to give him a, you know, apt answer. So Swami was looking around and Swami said, see, the analogy which I give, there are so many bulbs. You know, they might be of different wattages, they might be of different colors, different brightnesses. But the current running through is the same. All I'm telling you is, don't think you are the bulb, think you are the current.
It sounds so simple,
so
right?
Simple.
But to associate, you know, ourselves with that, I'm just again tempted to share one more very nice experience. This was again in Prashanti Nilayam. Mm-hmm. The typical thing that happens when you enter the room as, you know, students of the management program, our only prayer is, Swami, make me your instrument, make me your instrument. So mm-hmm. this was one of those sessions where all of us were enthusiastically, Swami, I would like to be your instrument. And then Swami smiled. He said, "That's my job, sir." We felt so happy. That's my job. And then he pointed at each one of us. He said, "You are my instrument. You are my instrument." So we all were waiting, you know. Swami is pointing at each one. "You are my instrument. You are my instrument." But you know, always there's a lesson waiting at the end. Finally, he pointed at his own physical body. He said, "This is my instrument." And then we were wondering, then Swami, who are you? It was an indirect way of saying, I am the I in all of you. This body is also my instrument. I mean, I think that is the way we need to live our day-to-day life, always remembering that this body, this mind, we are speaking now, but it is the instrument speaking. The speaker is Bhagwan. And I should associate myself with that. It's, I think it can definitely happen. Like any experiment happens, we need to experiment like we do experiments in a lab. And then it will become the truth.
Correct. In fact, when we are talking about our experiences with Swami, which convey a sense of Him being the indweller in our hearts, somebody who is not aware of Bhagwan or who has come across this kind of philosophy, they may ask a question like, once you realize or once you know the truth, how would you live in this world? So, you know, we have a ready-made example we have of Swami, how He always lived in the truth. But how real He was, how, you know, practical He was, how pragmatic and absolute common sense in every dealing with everything. At the same time, ever, you know, in that constant state of oneness with everybody. So, it's as you rightly said, it is not impossible.
It is not impossible. And as you also said, maybe there is no absolute benchmark to say that is how one would be. But there is one way to put it. You know what happened when we were in Swami's presence?
Right.
An overpowering sense of love. Overpowering sense of compassion. So I feel like any individual were to really reach that state and we are with Him, we would feel the same.
Right. Very
That's
true.
That's possible.
Very
one
true.
Metric to measure, you know, whether really am I making that impact on people.
I remember once when we were all sitting to as a group and we were just discussing some things which Swami had told in a discourse, and one of the lecturers actually raised this point. He said, you know, how will it be when you are one with yourself, when you realize yourself, when you reach that ultimate goal, what will you be as a personality? And there was one schoolboy in that group, you know, maybe an 8th standard boy, who very casually made a remark. I don't know how, whether he really understood how profound a remark he was making. But he said something which kind of answered it so perfectly. He said, sir, it's very simple. You know, till you reach there, you're always striving for Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Prema. Once you reach there, that becomes your nature. So it becomes spontaneous.
It's very true. It becomes spontaneous. But I've heard Swami saying even about discrimination, though he always says use your discrimination, he says a time should come when you don't have to discriminate.
Right.
Correct.
You are at the level of the intellect, just close to the Atman. So what you do becomes good.
Becomes
like
right.
We always say with Swami, what He did was Dharma. Swami didn't have to do, Avatar doesn't have to do Dharma. So there's no debate of did what He did, was it dharmic, was it adharmic. The premises itself is wrong. What He does is perfection. We have to understand how it is perfect.
In fact, I think I mentioned this, I'm not sure, in this series. In 2002, you know, I had gone to the, this is a personal experience of mine, but the statement that Swami made was very powerful. I had just gone to the school hostel to set up the camera where Swami was to visit the school hostel. Then Swami asked one boy, hey, where is this boy? And then that boy said, Swami, he has gone to the hostel to set up this camera. And Swami says, yes, he plays harmonium very well. He said, Swami, now he is learning camera work, he is learning editing, he is doing all that. Swami said, no, he has not learnt anything, but he is doing everything with love. So automatically everything is becoming
sanctified,
more beautiful. Everything is coming out properly because he's doing it with love. So in a sense, everything that we do, like how Swami did it with selfless love, because you're doing it for yourself. And that kind of brings in that sense of unity and that sense that all are myself and all I've got.
In fact, in Dharma Vahini, you know, it's a beautiful book. When you read it, possibly you get very confused in the beginning, but at the end, Swami gives a very concise definition of what is dharma. He says, anything you do with Atma Bhavam. And the other word for Atma Bhavam is Prema, because Atma and Prema are not different. So right. Anything we do with love, but not the worldly definition of limited love or selfish love, but the real divine love, selfless love. Anything we do with that automatically gets the sanction of being, you know,
Atma Bhavam. Talking about the self, and what would happen if you recognize yourself as the self and nothing else. I heard a talk by a monk from the Ramakrishna Mission. You know, he narrates this wonderful analogy. He says there is this father who takes his son to a movie. And this son has never been to a movie. For the first time he's being taken to a movie. And on the way to this theater, the father is explaining what is the cinema all about. He says there's a wide screen and there's a projector and the light throws these images and that gets projected and all that. So the child is all interested and he goes there. But by the time they reach the theater, the movie has already started. So they sit there and there is a scene of the Mahabharata which is going on. The war scene is going on. So the father and son duo sneak into the theater, take their seats. And the son is whispering to the father, Father, where's the screen? You said there's a white screen, where's the screen? And the father says, it's right in front of you. So the boy looks at it, you mean to say Krishna is the screen? So he says, no, see behind him. He looks behind him, you mean Arjuna is the screen? He said, no, see behind both of them. Then he looks at it, you mean the chariot? No, behind the chariot also. Then he looks at it, you mean the army? The father is getting impatient. He says, no, it's behind all that. You mean the horizon? The father says, wait. You know, after some time I'll explain. So the movie goes on, intermission comes, the projector is switched off, lights come on, and the son says, ah, there's the white screen. Okay? And then after that he's seeing the movie, he knows exactly where is the white screen and what is what now.
And that's why Bhagwan actually has given this example. Also Ramana Maharishi has given the same example. And the beautiful message out of that is, if you focus on the world, you cannot see the screen. If you focus on the screen, the world becomes an illusion. So if really, when what would happen is, if we were to really focus on the inner self, the whole world would appear to be like an illusion, though it is true. So that's the difference. And I also liked one more very nice thing which Bhagwan said in this discourse, and the way he puns with words, though he has not done it in this discourse. He says, when you associate yourself with the body, it becomes ahankara. But elsewhere Swami has explained, actually what is ahankara? Aham plus akara. So the feeling that I am this akara is the shape, you know, the physical body. The feeling that I am this physical body is ego, that is attachment to the body. Then he says, what is the final goal? Sakshatkara. He says, sakshat akara. The real form, which is truly the formless, that is realization. So very nicely Swami puts this whole journey from ahankara to sakshatkara.
I think even as Swami is saying that, you know, understand who you really are, one could say as, you know, if you look at yourself, one point is you're not the body, you're not the mind. Like how in Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that the body is a kshetra. You're a kshetrajna. So the first understanding is you're not this body, but the second understanding which comes is the same kshetrajna which is in you is actually in everyone. That commonness of what is that self, I think it is a two-step process which Swami is saying, because even in, you know, when you talk about Ramana Maharishi, how he gets that quest for finding out who he really is. There's that beautiful episode from his life where suddenly he gets the fear of death. He goes and hides in the attic. And so the people in the house hear some noise in the attic and they go up and they knock with a, I think they knock with a pole or something and ask, who is that? You know, who are you? And then Ramana asks himself that question, who am I? Who am I?
And when Prem was saying them, this thought occurred to me that, see, it's much easier and more practical to see the oneness in all rather than to believe in this body is not true. Because, you know, empirically we see it, we feel it. So to suddenly jump to a level wherein we say this is an illusion, that all of us may find it difficult. But I think it's much more easier to have this strong feeling, Swami is in you, Swami is in me. And I think that will take us to the, you know, real level of transcending the body.
Correct. Here Swami is speaking even about awareness. And he says the Atma itself creates the awareness. And in my understanding, I don't know if I'm right, there is this unmanifested Atma, that is the power. And through awareness, there is an individualization of that Atma. So that I, that aham, from the big I, there is a small I that comes out. And because of awareness, we separate from that big I. And then the moment a small I identifies itself with the body, then it's lost in this.
We say the jivatma, no? The separation is what causes that awareness. And Swami has given the definition of awareness. He said awareness is total understanding.
Okay.
Which means the Atman or the self has total understanding. That's what Prahlada says to his father Hiranyakashipu. He says, have you gained all the knowledge? He says, I've learned that by knowing which there's nothing more to know. That is that awareness, Atmic awareness. But as you said, as the, somehow we don't know the process, it is still a mystery, but that separation is what creates the Jivatman from the Paramatman, and then this whole grill of, you know, our earthly sojourn begins.
And so beautiful analogy which Swami has given, I think even earlier, Swami says, just like how the clouds which are formed by the activity of the sun itself comes and hides the sun away from your sight. The mind which is actually born out of the Atman tends to hide the Atman from.
And there are two more analogies Swami has given in other discourses. He says moss comes out of water. Mm-hmm. The same moss covers the water. He says cataract is born out of the eye.
Correct.
The same cataract covers the vision. So it's really a paradox that God creates mind. Mm. The same mind covers God. You know, it's very funny, and that's why mind is very dear to God. Mm. In one of our interviews, maybe more than one, whenever Swami says mind is a mad monkey, you know, it's like a monkey drunk and as like a scorpion, whatnot, bitten by a scorpion. But when we say like that, Swami gets very upset. Because I remember once he said, Swami, chala kashtam, Swami, mind control, it's like a mad monkey. Swami said, che, mind is God. You know, when it comes to Bhagwan, he says, mind is God, because it is his creation, it's so dear to him. So he says, don't fight with the mind. He says, impossible to win the mind. Why? Because it is my creation.
Wow.
So Swami says, you have to appeal to the mind, you have to plead with the mind, you know, and then overcome that. So, it's true. Mind is ultimately the creation of God. It has come from Him.
I think something very similar to this, Swami told a set of students about Maya.
Okay.
Swami said, don't fight with Maya. True. You'll only get more deluded. Swami said, accept Maya as also an offspring of God.
And that's mind. Mind is the mind. Maya, because being born from God, you know, it unfortunately, it prevents us from seeing the higher self within.
So shall we go to the next clip? And
Maybe there is just one thing I wanted to mention here. Swami has used this word mithya at one point, and I'm reminded of how Swami very clearly said, see, he never says, he said Atman is satya, but he didn't say body is asatya. Swami said mithya. I mean, this shows how practical, you know, Bhagwan's words are. He says why it is not asatya is, if you say today world is unreal, it is crazy. I mean, who will believe it? I mean, let's be very practical. It may be nice on paper. I'm touching this table. I'm speaking to them. I'm seeing you in flesh and blood. So, mithya, the definition Swami gives is, it has temporary existence. Just like a dream. In a dream, the thirst and the feeling is as genuine as real life. So, in that context, in that circumstance, it is real. But fundamentally, it is unreal.
Correct.
So, that's how they came up with the word mithya. So Swami says the attachment to body, mind and the senses and all is mithya. No doubt you are having that experience now. It is genuine, it is true, but don't think it is permanent.
There
is something beyond this.
I think it's more of our concentration on space and time.
Yes.
Like suppose if I were to describe who is Rangarajan sir, if I'm going to tell he's the person who is sitting in the studio, who is sitting in this pose, on this chair.
Yeah.
And if somebody were to come tomorrow at the same time and find you're not here, it doesn't take away your identity.
Yes.
It was for that moment. I mean, suppose in this room someone comes and asks, who is Sai Prakash, who is Rangarajan sir? I can describe it based on what you are right now. It is real, as you're saying, it is not asatya, it is real.
It's a temporary manifestation of the five element permutation combination, as in the earlier discourses Swami has said.
So as Swami, and that is one of the reasons why Swami, when he looks at us and you say that, you know, I am having this problem and my mother is not well, my father is not well. Maybe when Swami looks at us, he might be seeing the thousands of mothers you have had and the thousands of mothers you are going to have.
Yes.
And for this one person whom you are, you know, feeling as though your whole world is going to crumble.
Perspective changes so much when you see the full, you know, across the horizon. The whole perspective changes.
And when Swami looks at you and says, Chala Santosham, it must definitely be born out of not apathy, but that kind of very, very deep wisdom.
It's the total awareness. Because just like in sports meet, when we sit on the stage and watch the formations they make, you know, it doesn't mean much to us. But when you all projected it on the screen there from the hilltop, from Hanuman, wow, it was a beautiful, I love you. You know, a simple example, but how perspective can change when your height increases. So when we raise our spiritual height, you know, the whole world looks different. That's why Swami says, Anta Maya, and he says, I am you and no difference. I mean, he means it. It is not any sort of thing to impress us, but that's what he is and that's what he's living. But from our level, at our, maybe we are at height zero or minus 10, we see things in a different way.
And shall we go to the next clip in this discourse?
Iyukka ఆత్మ నుండి మొట్టమొదట వినిపించేటువంటి యొక్క శబ్దము నేను.
ద ఫస్ట్ సౌండ్ విచ్ ఎమర్జెస్ అండ్ ఈజ్ హర్డ్ బై మ్యాన్ ఫ్రమ్ ఆత్మ ఈజ్ ఐ.
ఈ నేను అనేటువంటి యొక్క శబ్దము పుట్టిన తరువాతనే సృష్టి అంతే కూడాను ప్రారంభమైంది.
ఓన్లీ ఆఫ్టర్ దిస్ వర్డ్ ఐ ఈజ్ బోర్న్ the rest of the creation was born.
Nene lekundina srushtiye ledu.
If there is no I, there is no creation.
Ee nenu annadi atma annadi brahma annadi ivanni kudunu kevalam paryaya padamule.
This I, atma and brahma are synonyms.
Manorahitamainatunti yokka nene సస్వరూపమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఆత్మ.
ది ఐ విచ్ ఇస్ నాట్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ద మైండ్ ఈజ్ ద రియల్ ఫారమ్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ.
మనోసహితమైనటువంటి యొక్క నేనే మిథ్యాత్మ.
మైండ్ అసోసియేటెడ్ విత్ ఐ ఈజ్ మిథ్యాత్మ.
ఉన్నది ఒక్కే ఆత్మ.
బట్ దెర్ ఇస్ ఓన్లీ వన్ ఆత్మ.
అదే ఒక్క నేను.
దట్ ఈస్ ద సింగిల్ ఐ.
కానీ ఇటు ఏకాత్మతో కూడినటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వాన్ని అనుభవించే నిమిత్తమై మానవుడు అనేక సాధనలు చేస్తున్నాడు.
మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ మేకింగ్ ఎ నంబర్ ఆఫ్ సాధనాస్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ దిస్ సింగిల్ ఐ.
నిజముగా ఆత్మాన్వేషణ నిమిత్తమై చలిపేట సాధనలన్నీ కూడాను అజ్ఞాన దశయందు ఆచరించేటువంటి కర్మలే.
All the sadhanas performed in quest of Atma are done in a state of ignorance.
Ee sadhanalanni kudanu kevalamu jnani endu kaanaravu.
These sadhanas cannot be obtained in
jnani. Jnani sadhana sadhyamo anetunte yokka vyathyasame undadu.
For a jnani, the all-knowing, there is nothing like sadhana and sadhyam.
Unnadi okkate ekam sat.
There is only one. And that is truth.
ఇట్టి ఏకత్వాన్ని పొందే నిమిత్తమై మానవుడు సాధనలు చేస్తున్నాడంటే ఇది కేవలము మానసిక తృప్తి నిమిత్తమై చేసేటువంటి యొక్క ప్రక్రియలే.
All the efforts made by man in order to experience that single I are only to efforts made to remove mind.
మనసునే నిర్మూలముగా ఆవించుకునవన్నని వేదాంతం బోధించుచుండగా మనసును సంతృప్తిపరిచే నిమిత్తమై చేసేటువంటి సాధనలు మనసును కేవలం బలపరిచినట్టు అవుతుంది.
వెన్ ఫిలాసఫీ ఈజ్ టీచింగ్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ మస్ట్ బి మేడ్ టు ఎలిమినేట్ అండ్ అన్హిలేట్ ఐ. ఇఫ్ యు ఆర్ మేకింగ్ ఎఫర్ట్స్ టు ప్లీజ్ దిస్ ఐ, ఇట్ ఈస్ ఎ వేస్ట్ అండ్ ఇట్ ఈస్ రాదర్
అన్వైజ్. ఏమైనా సాధనలు చేయాలని సంకల్పించుకుంటే,
ఇఫ్ యు వాంట్ టు డూ ఎనీ సాధనాస్,
అనాత్మ భావాన్ని దూరం గావించుకో.
You have to remove from yourself the anatmic bhavanas, bhavanas not associated with atma.
Neevemaina atmanandanni anduko gorinappudu nee drushtini atma vaipuna maralchu.
If you want to really enjoy atmic bliss, divert your vision towards atma.
Inte kaani moksha prapti nimittamai kaani atmanugraha nimittamai kaani atmajnana nimittamai kaani ఆత్మానంద నిమిత్తమై కాని సాధనలు చేయటము కేవలము ఒక విధమైనటువంటి భ్రాంతియే.
ఆన్ ది అదర్ హ్యాండ్ ఆల్ ది ఎఫర్ట్స్ మేడ్ ఇన్ ఆర్డర్ టు గెట్ లిబరేషన్ ఆర్ బ్లిస్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ అండ్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ ఆర్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్
ఇది కేవలము మనోభ్రాంతి యొక్క చర్యలు.
దిస్ ఆర్ ఆల్ డెల్యూజన్స్ ఆఫ్ ద మైండ్.
ముక్తి కోరినడు ముక్కోటి దేవతల, ముక్తి కోరినరుడు ముక్కోటి దేవతల, ఆశ్రయించునే కాని అన్యమెరుగా, తనలు దోని అహము తా చంపుకొన్నను, తనదు లోని అహము తా చంపుకొన్నను, ముక్తి ఏల తానే ముక్తి కాడే, ముక్తి ఏల తనను ముక్తి కాడే.
సీకింగ్ లిబరేషన్ మ్యాన్ ప్రేస్ టు 3 crores ఆఫ్ గాడ్స్ అండ్ హీ రిసార్ట్స్ టు దెమ్, బట్ దిస్ ఈజ్ నాట్ యూస్ఫుల్.
కానీ ముక్కోటి దేవతలను ఆరాధన చేస్తుంటాడు ముక్తి కోరి మానవుడు.
Aspiring to get liberation, man is worshipping 3 crores.
ఉన్నది ఒక్కటే అని వేదము కాని, శాస్త్రం కాని, బైబిల్ కాని, ఖురాన్ కాని, ఏ గ్రంథములైనప్పటికీ నిర్ణయాన్ని పరిచి సత్యాన్ని బోధించుచుండగా ముక్కోటి అనేటువంటి సంఖ్యకు విలువ ఎక్కడ ఉంటుండాలి?
When the Veda, Shastras, Bible, Quran and all scriptures are teaching that there is only one God, what is the idea of 3 crores of gods?
కనుక ఇవన్నీ కూడాను మనోభ్రాంతుల యొక్క వికారములు.
These are all the perversions of the delusions of the mind.
మనస్సు ఉండినంత వరకు కోరికలు తప్పవు.
As long as mind lasts, he will have desires.
కోరికలు ఉండినంత వరకును కూడాను అభిమాన మమకారములు వదలవు.
As long as one has desires, likes and dislikes cannot be
అభిమాన మమకారములు ఉండినంత వరకును అహంకారము పోదు.
As long as one has likes and dislikes, one cannot get rid of his ego.
అహంకారం పోయేంత వరకు కూడాను ఆత్మజ్ఞానం కలగదు.
As long as one removes ego, one will not be able to get the knowledge of Atma.
కనుక ఆత్మజ్ఞానం కాని, ఆత్మానందం కాని, ఆత్మదర్శనం కాని మనోనాశనం చేతనే సంభవిస్తుంది, కాని అన్య మార్గంలో మనకు లభ్యం కాదు.
ది నాలెడ్జ్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ, ది బ్లిస్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ, ది దర్శన్ ఆఫ్ ది విజన్ ఆఫ్ ఆత్మ కెన్ బి ఒబ్టైన్డ్ ఓన్లీ బై ఎలిమినేషన్ ఆఫ్ ఈగో అండ్ బై నో అదర్
మీన్స్. మనసు, బుద్ధి, చిత్తం మరి అహంకారంబు ఎందు పుట్టి పెరిగి ఎందడంగే.
ఫ్రమ్ వేర్ దిస్ మైండ్, ఇంటెలిజెన్స్, చిత్త అండ్ ఈగో టేక్ దర్ బర్త్?
ఎందు పుట్టి పెరిగి ఎందడంగే.
వేర్ డిడ్ దే టేక్ దర్ బర్త్? వేర్ డిడ్ దే గ్రో అండ్ వేర్ డిడ్ దే మర్జ్ బ్యాక్?
అది ఏ బ్రహ్మ, అది ఏ ఆత్మ.
దట్ ఈస్ బ్రహ్మ అండ్ దట్ ఈస్ ఆత్మ.
కనుక నీ యొక్క పుట్టుక స్థానమును నీవు గుర్తించే నిమిత్తమై, నీ స్వస్వరూపాన్ని నీవు గుర్తించే నిమిత్తమై అన్య మార్గమునందు నీవు అన్వేషణ జరిపినా ఇది ఏ రీతిగా నీవు పొందగలవు నీ యొక్క స్వస్వరూపాన్ని?
దేర్ ఫార్ హౌ కెన్ యూ గెట్ యువర్ ఓన్ రియల్ ఫారం, ఇట్స్ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ అండ్ ఇట్స్ రియలైజేషన్ బై ఎనీ అదర్ మీన్స్?
ఇది ఎట్లా ఉన్నదంటే, దొంగ తాను పోలీసు వేషం వేసుకుని తన్ను పట్టడానికే ప్రయత్నించినట్టుగా ఉంటుంటాడు.
దిస్ ఈజ్ కంపేరబుల్ టు ఎ థీఫ్ పుట్టింగ్ ఆన్ ది డ్రెస్ ఆఫ్ ఎ పోలీస్ మ్యాన్ ఈజ్ ట్రైంగ్ టు ఫైండ్ అవుట్ హూ ద థీఫ్ ఈజ్, హీ ఈజ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్.
నిన్ను గుర్తించుకోవడానికి అన్య సాధనలు ఎందుకు?
టు రికగ్నైజ్ యువర్ సెల్ఫ్, వై షుడ్ యు రిసార్ట్ టు అదర్ సాధనాస్ అట్ ఆల్?
దీనికి ఒక చిన్న కథ ఉంటుండేది.
హియర్ ఇస్ ఎ స్టోరీ టు ఇల్లస్ట్రేట్ దిస్.
I think we're also becoming like the serial soaps which come stopping at very interesting points, and hopefully our listeners will tune in next week also to listen to that story.
Oh God, I was waiting for that story. How beautifully Swami says, it's like the thief putting on the police dress, yeah, and trying to catch himself.
Exactly. In fact, sir, I should share that sometime back when I was reading some books and Swami's discourses, this was exactly the thought which came. Of course, I had not read this analogy of Swami. I was so thrilled to see it, hear it today. Because I remember once I had in frustration written a small piece. Mm-hmm. And I think I'll just read it out. I've just got it here. And this is very similar to what Swami is telling, had written. There once lived a policeman who committed a crime against himself.
Mm-hmm.
He alone was the witness to this act. So one fine day the policeman decided to investigate the case himself as the crime occurred in his jurisdiction. After inquiring and interrogating the lone witness that was himself, the cop came to the conclusion that the crime was committed by himself. So what did he do? He set up a trap to corner the culprit, and then one fine day in an encounter he killed the criminal. He killed himself, thus the criminal, the investigating officer and the witness died.
That's a good one.
I mean, that
is... It's got a very spiritual message also. I think that's what will happen when finally we realize ourselves. Our temporary existence will vanish. And there will be nothing left, and we would have possibly realized that Swami always says there was nothing at all to, you know, discover.
Right, and a very classic example which many masters give, and which is very profound and very beautiful, it's like a dog chasing its tail.
True.
It never catches the tail, but one fine day it stops and says, oh, it's already mine, and it stops.
Like the musk deer example.
Musk
also.
Deer, right.
What I liked here is Swami explaining, you know, a very nice way. He says, when the awareness is focused on the body, there are many. So the sigma body is what our scriptures call as Virata Swarupa.
Correct.
Or, you know, we always have this feeling, where is this Vishwa Swarupa? Swami has made it very clear. Look at the world around you. That is Vishwa Swarupa. When the awareness focuses on the mind, again there are many. So Swami says that sigma mind he refers to as Hiranyagarbha.
Okay.
And the manifestation of that, Swami has many times shown a lingam, and he says this is how it's symbolic of the Hiranyagarbha, symbolic of the cosmic mind. But when he says it comes to the Atman, there is no more sigma, because there's only one. There cannot be two. So it's a beautiful way of showing how there is diversity, and then unity. And Swami always says, see the unity in diversity, see the... So coming back to the same point, it's easier to see this commonness among all, even if other aspects of Vedanta may seem very philosophical, but seeing the commonness in all, that is something I think we should really strive
for. You know, when you're talking about seeing Swami in all, a very beautiful incident, very sweet incident comes to my mind. We were in our 10th standard. And, you know, because Swami, this is a board exam, you know, it's very difficult. We have to face the board exam. So we need a special interview from you. So somehow we justified ourselves that we needed a special interview with Swami. And so as a class, we were, you know, making all efforts. And I remember very clearly, you know, there is the first step below the main veranda where, you know, you had that Sharabham and that elephant. That is where the boys would sit on the veranda, and it was afternoon time, and you know the sun coming from the setting sun, and Swami has finished his interviews, and he's just standing there, kya samachar, and then all of us, Swami, please interview, Swami, which class, Swami, 10th standard, how many boys? They said, Swami, 27 boys. Then Swami is smiling, what about me, sir? Swami asked. Then one boy told Swami, 28. Swami, you are also there, Swami, 28. Then Swami said, wrong answer. 27 plus 27.
That's such,
yeah. Now, I'm reminded of another interaction which happened when we were all waiting. There were two boys who were staying together. So in an interview, Swami asked everybody. Swami was actually instructing us that none of us should stay alone when you're staying outside the ashram. Make sure you stay in groups. Don't stay alone in a room. So when Swami called the group again for an interview, Swami was asking, have you all, you know, made arrangement that you don't stay alone? So Swami is asking everybody, how many of you stay together? How many of you stay together? So it came to one boy, two boys were staying together. Swami said, how many of you stay together? So they said, Swami, two of us. Swami said, wrong answer. You forgot me. So the next time when Swami asked them, they said, Swami, three of us. Swami said, wrong answer, it's 2 plus 2. Then they said, okay, Swami. The next time when Swami asked them, how many of you, they said, Swami, 4 of us. Swami said, wrong answer, all are one.
Oh, Swami always is the winner. You know, you can never win Bhagavan. But of course, the most stunning part of the clip we heard now, as you know, is in one go, Bhagavan nullifies all the rituals, all the worship, and all the Navavidha Bhakti. But I think we need to understand that in a very right perspective, because I still remember one of the discourses in Kulwant Hall where Swami declared there is no Brahma, there is no Vishnu, there is no Maheshwara. You know, people were really stunned. What is this Bhagavan saying? And he said there is only one. no form. Mm. But what Bhagwan has always been saying is that, many times he has said this to us, that all this is time pass.
Mm.
And then he would put it very nicely. He would say it's a good way of spending your time. It's not bad, naturally, you know, better than, possibly wasting your time on the net or, watching some undesirable movies or something. This is a good way of spending your time. But he would always say that true sadhana begins only when the mind at least is inclined to turn inwards.
Correct.
So till then, let's not even call it spirituality. Pilgrimages, worship, rituals, archanam, kirtanam, all that is good way. And maybe at our level, possibly it's preparing the mind to at least get that inclination to turn inward. But Bhagwan says only when it starts turning inwards, that is the commencement of our spiritual journey. So this is something very profound and we really need to discuss more about that.
In fact, rewinding a little bit into the various aspects that cloud the mind. Mm-hmm. The Swami had given Mala, Vikshepa and Avarna. He said Mala is like dust on the mirror.
Right.
So when there's dust on the mirror, you can't see yourself. And the only way you can remove the dust is through karma marga.
Hmm.
And then he comes, mala vikshepa. Vikshepa is like the wavering. Suppose the mirror is going on shaking, then you can't see your reflection in the mirror. So the way to calm the mind, to silence all the ripples is bhakti marga. And then he says, avarna is like a thick cloth, a black cloth put on the mirror, where you can't see your reflection. And the only way to remove that black cloth is actually kama, krodha, lobha, moha. And the way to remove that is jnana marga.
True.
So, there is a place for all this.
And just a little tweak to what you said. In each case, it is not that you cannot see yourself, but we see a distorted image of ourselves.
That's the point.
And that's the problem. Means what all we are seeing is divine, is love, is Bhagwan, but it is the quote-unquote distorted forms which you get carried away with, forgetting the real image.
In fact, just last time, a few days back, I met one of our alumni brothers and we just started talking. And obviously, I was so inspired by the series of discourses and I was talking to him. I think I mentioned it to
you.
And I was just telling him and he said, now I'm understanding what Swami told me many, many years ago in the interview room. And I was saying, what did Swami tell? He said, Swami once looked at me and then he says, who am I? Who are you? Then he didn't know. Then he said, Swami, you say that all are God, so I'm also God, you're also God. Means he didn't understand. Then Swami paused for a while and Swami said, what do you see when you see the mirror? When you look at yourself in the mirror, what do you see? Then he says, Swami, I see myself. And Swami says, but many times you see a distorted image. What is my role? My role is to correct that image and to make it perfect. So to correct that image in that mirror and make it perfect, that is my role. So when I correct that image, you see me.
Very true.
That's in a way, you see yourself,
your inner self,
in yourself, and you see God. So his role is to correct that image. So basically, to remove the impurities that distort the image.
I mean, that's why he's Sai, see always inside. The very name Sai means see always inside.
Right. In fact, that's what one thing which Swami has repeated many times. Spiritual path is that which makes you look within. The day you start seeing the flaws which you see outside within you, you're working outside. You don't stop that. You're doing what duty you're supposed to do, what action you're supposed to do, but having that recognition that there's something wrong within which is also reflecting outside and correcting.
In fact, even when the Vedanta talks of the 3 crores of gods, which Swami always says, and Bhagwan himself has explained, what they really meant was that was the population in those days. So it was actually one way of saying that everybody is divine. So that's what it really meant. But unfortunately today the distorted understanding is, in Hinduism they have 3 crores of gods. It never meant that. So rather than taking that essence of the message, unfortunately we have got caught in, this sort of diversity. But what it really means is all are one. That is the
message. And I think it's also what Swami is telling about different ways of worshipping, worshipping different gods. It all comes from some kind of desire. There's this wonderful story which they say there is a monastery and there's a great master and he's having disciples. And among those disciples, there's one disciple who's supposed to be the pinnacle. He's reached what everybody desires to reach.
Mm-hmm.
So the master calls him and says, you're ready to go. Okay, and he takes a word from him that every 3 months he will write back
mm-hmm.
about his state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now how he's faring mm-hmm. with the knowledge which he has taken from the master.
Mm-hmm.
So the first 3 months pass and a letter comes and he says, Master, I'm in bliss. I'm always thinking about the truth. I'm always in bliss. So the master reads the letter and tears it up in disgust and throws it away. And the other disciples who actually got to read the letter, they're saying, you know, he's written such wonderful experiences of his and the master is tearing it off.
Mm.
3 months pass, the second letter comes and he says, Master, I'm seeing oneness everywhere. I'm seeing myself in everybody and I know I'm absolutely sure that there's only one. The master again tears the letter in disgust and throws it away. And all the disciples are wondering, why is the master behaving like this? The next 3 months pass and no letter comes from this man. And 3 more months pass and 6 months go by and no letter. Now the master says, hey, this fellow is not written to me anymore. So he sends a set of disciples in search of that man. And they go and in a absolutely dilapidated hut, nothing there, this man is sitting, smiling to himself. Then they say, the master has sent us. You have not written about what you are experiencing in life. And he says, I don't care. Okay? So the disciples come back running and tell the master, and master, this guy has become very impertinent. This is what he says. He says, I don't care. Now the master starts jumping in joy. And he says, now he has reached. The master says, you know, when you have absolutely no care for anything, when you have nothing to achieve, when you realize that there's nothing to be achieved, there's nothing to be won, and you have no, you're not even bothered that people should recognize what you have got. That is when you really have got what you...
In a slightly different tone about trying to understand the oneness in everybody, Ramakrishna Paramahamsa cries out to Mother Kali. He says, Mother, Mother, they are telling that I should have food. You know, the disciples are telling that I am not having anything, I should have food. And then she says, aren't you eating with thousands of mouths? Aren't you eating with everybody's mouth? What? How does it matter if this one particular mouth doesn't eat?
That's why, you know, many times when, you know, this topic of the world scenario would come up with Bhagwan and we would say, Swami, why is there so much of problem? Always he gave one answer. He said, Adi Ajnanamu. So Swami never brought it down to the level of, you know, lack of education or lack of health care. I mean, those are such gross level issues. So fundamentally, man has forgotten his divinity. That ignorance. And same way, even when it came to students and, you know, some student made a mistake, then Swami would always say, Papam Ajnanamu. Out of ignorance. So we would always think, you know, ignorance means not knowing a rule. Swami's ignorance, as he very, in a very structured way, you know, Swami has said in this clip, he says, so long as there is mind, there are desires. So long as there is desires, the I and mine, you know, mamakaram, ahankaram remains. So long as that is there, the ego or the body attachment is there. And so long as that is there, Swami says, ignorance remains. So finally he says, you have to kill the mind. I think that's why always says, mano moolam idam jagat, means the root cause of every problem in this world. And I think this is something the world should take away today, especially our own country going through all these problems. You know, they're really hitting at the wrong point. The cause is somewhere and you see the action being taken elsewhere. We need to really tackle this mind of ours and then make it turn inward to understand this truth.
Yes, Swami has said elsewhere, there are only three sins. You can give a constitution and say these are all the violations if you undertake. But there are only three sins. And Swami says that to think that you're the body, to think that so-and-so is mine, and to think that you are the doer. These are the only three sins you get punished for.
One beautiful analogy that always comes to my mind is to live this sort of life possibly is, the way I understand is like that of a film actor. You know, we know the person is acting, or let's say she's acting the role of a poor woman in a movie. She's actually a very rich actress. And all the time she knows that what she's acting like an impoverished lady with no food and maybe hungry and a baby crying in her arms. But all the time when she's acting, she knows at a point they'll say, cut, then I go back to my 5-star hotel and have the good food. But still, she's playing her role so well, getting lost in it. I think that's the clue we must take away, that can we live our lives all the time knowing within that I am divine, I am the higher self, but nothing changes outside. In the sense, outside I do my actions, but as we had discussed earlier, it'll be the best way, the most dharmic way, with lot of love. But inside I'm always aware that It is
Swami. Why, when Swami was giving away, after the drama, some of those items of gifts to all the actors, Swami said, you all are part-time actors. I am 24 hours actor.
Yeah,
I am always acting. I am a 24 hours actor. So
life is really a drama. No, it's not just a statement Swami makes. Life is a drama. We really need to be actors in it, in the true sense.
And as Swami would say, life is a dream. And Swami would say,
yeah.
In a dream, there is no logic. That's the end of it. But we always asking, struggle to find out why this happens.
That's
why that happens.
Mind, because mind wants some explanation for everything.
But
this
one beautiful thing which Hislop asked Swami. Swami, this you say this is Maya and this is a dream. Mm. You are also in this dream.
Mm.
You are also Maya. You are also in this dream. Swami says, yes. But I am the dream lion.
Yeah.
I have come to roar and wake you up from this dream.
And he has done that. He's done that for 85 long years in the physical form. But I don't know how many of us have woken up. I think we should really, make every effort to wake up.
What we heard today was also one of those roars, I guess.
Roars.
And through that discussion, we've taken a small bite of Bishu's segment. But I think we'll end here. Rangarajan sir, on behalf of all our listeners, I think, I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of all of them. We're very glad that we had you here.
It was a great pleasure.
And we would please request you to come again and again to this show.
Yes, I think it's an open invitation and we would be really glad if you could make your time to join us. Especially for this discourse, I think we would love to have you again. So dear listeners, this brings us to the end of this segment, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, this week. If you have any thoughts about our discussion, if you have any thoughts to share with us, you can always write to listener@radiosai.org. I, on behalf of Sai Prakash and Rangarajan sir, who is a special guest today, offer this segment at Bhagwan's Lotus Feet. In a short while from now, Bishu will join you with the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside.